Hey guys, guest tonight, Zandeo is going to be talking about ancient giants and aliens. We'll be right back. Grab your popcorn and snacks. Find a comfy spot, take a seat or lie down, and let me transport you to a place of fantasy, ghost stories, ancient legends, odd creatures, alien encounters, and other magical topics. You may even decide to join the conversation. From faraway lands to your own backyard, with a small dash of pixie dust, turn out the lights and open your minds. The journey is about to begin. Good evening, everybody. How's everybody doing? Getting all that closer to Easter. Happy Wednesday. Happy Hump Day. Whatever you guys call it. My name is Charlotte. I'm going to be your host for the next hour. I'm also the owner of the California Haunts Paranormal Investigation Team based out of Sacramento, California. We're 45 strong up and down the state, which means if you have a paranormal need, we can get to you. It'll take us a while because California is huge. People don't realize just how large a state we have here, but California is huge. And so in the case that it is huge, what I'm doing right now, I'm multitasking because Stan is not in the green room yet. So I'm trying to get a link over to him to make sure he has it. So let me go ahead and do this real quick for you guys. And if he does miss the show, we can just talk about ghosties. I mean, it's what I do, so it is what it is. So let me get on in here and fire off an email to him and just to make sure in case he needs it. Yes. Okay, just give me 1 second, and then we'll have a chit-chat. Because maybe he didn't get it. Because you never know. You never know. You never know with these things. See you in a few minutes. Okay, let me drop it in. Sometimes it looks like, you know, it goes out, and sometimes my internet isn't the greatest in the world. So I find out, like, the night of the show that somebody didn't get their link. Okay. All right. Anyway, continuing on with my little intro here and my little pitter-patter. Yeah, you can find the California Haunts Paranormal Investigation Team all over Facebook. We're all over YouTube. Just anything. All you got to do is Google us. Just Google. Type it in. California Haunts Paranormal Investigation Team and you'll find us. You can even find us under California Haunts Radio. Okay, that done. And if you're watching from Facebook tonight, and a lot of you are, you like what you hear and see tonight, please feel free to follow if you haven't done so already. We're always looking for followers. And please feel free to comment in the chat room. Don't be shy. And leave us a happy face. So, you know, show us some, Nancy likes to say, show us some love. So let's, you know, feel free to show us some love. Please feel free to show us some love. Also, that works for YouTube as well. If you haven't subscribed yet, you know, we've got more than 900 videos sitting over there, and they're all different topics. I am a journalist, photojournalist, so I like to kind of change it up so you're not going to have a lot of the same paranormal stuff. You're going to have a lot of paranormal stuff, cryptids, you name it, just like tonight's show, you know, variations. But I also like to do regular news items as well, you know, health stuff, psychology stuff, and things like that. So I'm sure if you go through there, you'll find something that you like. Plus, along that note, going through there, I have separated stuff into categories for you guys. I've started to anyway. There's a lot of videos. Because I know when I look over there and I start going through videos, it gives me a headache. It gives me a huge headache. So, yeah, so I've separated some. So if you like cryptids, there's going to be stuff in cryptids for you to go find. You like medium Nancy Matz, who comes in on Fridays, she's got her own file, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Ghosts, what, you know, whatever you want. Sunday reading day, it's all over there. It's for you guys to find. And again, you know, please feel free to chat in the chat room amongst yourselves. I'll even read those things and interact with you. And do show us some happy hearts, some happy faces, and things like that. Because that does help us. Same thing for Twitch. In fact, all the social medias are like that. Hit those like buttons and all that good stuff, okay? I'm kind of running ahead of myself here. Thinking about Stan doesn't come on, what are we going to talk about? Anyway, I have some announcements to make tomorrow morning if you guys are interested in meeting me and getting to know me a little more. And also, you have a paranormal question that I haven't answered, or Nancy and I haven't answered on the Friday evening show. You can join me for Coffee with a Ghost Hunter, and that's at 9 a.m. Pacific tomorrow. That's over off our, that'll be here at StreamYard, but it'll be a private room. It's a virtual coffee, as if we're at Starbucks, so that means you don't have to dress up or anything like that. You can come in your curlers and your fluffy slippers and all that stuff, and come in and ask me anything you want, and we'll have a coffee together and talk for about an hour or so. You know, it beats going to Starbucks or someplace where it's noisy. You can just have a nice, quiet time to have a chit-chat. So that's at 9 a.m. Pacific tomorrow. And you can find that by going over to the California Haunts Paranormal Investigation Team meetup site and sign up. Saturday, we're also having an event. It is spring, and it's a time of reinvention and new beginnings. And we will be going to... Nancy will be doing readings on Saturday at 2 p.m. Pacific for people that would like to find out what direction their lives are going in, or what direction maybe they should go in, or maybe they have a deceased relative that they'd like to contact. This is the chance to do that with Nancy. You'll get a 10-minute reading. So if that's something that interests you, go ahead and sign up for that. That, again, is over at the California Haunts Meetup, and go under events and look that one up. Now, I have a what I call a pop-up event. Didn't think I was going to do this, but all the stars aligned for me. We will be, as in all of us in this community here on Facebook and all these places and on the RSS feed, I will be building a Easter gingerbread house. We're going to stay in the tradition that we've been having. You know, we built a couple at Christmas. We built one at Valentine's Day. Didn't get to build one for St. Patrick's Day, but we are going to build one Saturday night, 6 p.m. Pacific, my big studio, the next room, and we're going to build a Easter gingerbread house. So if you guys, kind of are sitting back having dinner Saturday night and you want to watch that, or, and I also take input. So while I'm building, I do take input, so you guys can tell me what you think I should do. So I did find an Easter gingerbread kit that was affordable, and I went ahead and picked it up today, and so we're going to be building an Easter gingerbread house kit on Saturday afternoon. So check that out. I will be posting it after the show, I will be posting it in the usual places, and including the California Haunts Paranormal Investigation Team meetup, so you guys can find it over there. We did do a prelim on Sunday. The group did go out, and that was a very interesting prelim. There's a lot. If what the client is saying is true, there is a lot going on at this particular house. It's very, very active. There's three psychics that live in the house. You got three people that are sensitive that live there. So they're pulling in a lot of stuff, not only from their own backgrounds, but stuff that from the area as well. So that should be a very interesting investigation. I don't know if we're going to go live. I've got some issues with my internet, with my phone and my internet, but we'll see. I may be able to go live. We'll just have to play that one by ear and see what happens. And I still don't know when we're going to go out on that yet. I have a lot of information that I have to type in. As many of you know, as far as investigating goes, I'm very meticulous with my paperwork that I have the team fill out and the team works with. So I did fill out the questionnaire, and there's 101 questions on that. Plus, we do a walk around of the building inside and out every room, and I jot down information about that. What I can share with you is something that happened in the kitchen. We were going in the kitchen to start our walk around, and I had a tri-field meter with me, and which is an EMF meter, and I turned the thing on, and for about half a second, as soon as I turned it on, once it settled, because of course you turn them on, you gotta wait for the settle. Once it settled, the meter went off, and it not only went off, it was completely off the charts. And then, boom, that was the end of it. Nothing. And you could even hear my reaction, because I had a recorder going. You could even hear my reaction going, wow, what was that? Because it just took me by surprise. And as we scanned the kitchen, as I continued my tri-field scan of the kitchen, all the readings were like in the center on the meter. There were nothing really super high or anything. That was the only time that something spiked. So, like I said, I don't know what that is. I'm not saying it was paranormal, but if it was paranormal, somebody or something was standing there and came to see what I was doing, and that's what set the meter off. So it should be interesting to see what happens on investigation night. Because if the activity that they're reporting happens while we're out, in fact, I even did some EVP work towards the end because we went outside. It's on 6.5 acres. I did the EVP, I did some EVP work towards the end of the preliminary investigation, and I haven't even listened to that yet. So I'll be listening to that later on tonight to hear to see if I can hear anything on that for that EVP work. But if what they say is true and about what's going on this property, it's going to be an interesting investigation to see what we pick up and the answers that we get, because there's a lot of history to this property and it's huge. It's a huge property to investigate, and so I'm excited to be going out there. But like I said, I have to finish off the prelim paperwork and put all that together, because what we do is I'll finish that off, and the only people that don't receive the prelim paperwork are the mediums. Because, obviously we don't want to influence them in any way. So I will hand this prelim paperwork out to my on-site investigators before they go, so they can get a feel for everything. And that's the whole point of doing it, is we go through the house ahead of time, like during the prelim, pick up all the EMF readings and everything, and have them all written down, so that if they do, or if they are walking around and they hit a spike, like what I experienced in the kitchen, then they know to look into it more. Because if they look on the list and there's nothing, from the previous walkthrough that has any high EMF spikes or anything in that particular place, they know something else might be going on. So then they really start to look into it. So that's why we do all that. We do, we go out, and we look at everything. We're looking at the windows. We're looking at the locations of the trees by the windows. We're looking how far are the fences away from the house. If people are hearing voices in the house, can they hear the neighbors talking? That's what we're looking at. We're looking at distance. We're looking at shadows, that if people are seeing what they think are shadow people walking down the hallway, or shadows in the hallway that they can't explain, how far where are the windows located in the house? How far are the trees away from the windows? Noises, maybe something's hitting the roof and they think they're hearing noises. So we're looking at all that stuff, and we have to, and that's what the paperwork is. And my paperwork is extensive as well, as far as the stuff for the walk around. But that takes, when we do that, like Sunday, we were out there for about 3 hours. It takes about 3 hours. It depends how many people we have out with us too. If we have just one person out, and I have done it myself, it takes a lot longer to do, because we are going through looking at all this stuff. If it has two people out, it's a little shorter. If you have three, a lot faster, because while someone is sitting asking the questions, the other two are doing the walk around and getting the EMF readings and everything. But normally what happens is, if you've got two people, you have to have at least two walking around doing the EMF readings. So the way we play it out is, I will ask the questions and the other person takes notes. That's the only way to do it. I hate when stuff pops up. Don't you hate any pop-ups? I hate pop-ups. There we go. But it is very meticulous, and we look at everything. We look at carpeting. We look at what type of flooring they have. How thin are the walls in the house? Excuse my squeaky chair. So we look, like I said, we look at the flooring. How thick the walls are in the house. I mean, can they hear? How far is the street away from the front of the house? Because can people hear voices coming through the walls as well? The house. I know there have been places that we've done where there have been mail slots, and the client will say that she wakes up half asleep and hears voices. Well, the street's not that far away. You've got a mail slot there. Of course, the sound's going to carry up through the mail slot. There's issues like that. Or maybe they live on a trail. We've had clients that have lived near a walking trail that was near their fence, and the fence wasn't that far from the house, and the voices could have been coming from there. So we look at all that stuff, and that's what I will do in the preliminary. That's what the preliminary is about. Instead of doing that on, which testing that stuff on investigation night, we'll test it out during the preliminary. But then you might say, yeah, if you do the preliminary during the day and night, when you go on investigation night, the situation might be different because the weather conditions and things are different. Of course they are. So the guys will go out and whoever happens to get that assignment will go out and double check what I got during the prelim. So they will double check that stuff. But it doesn't consume the whole investigation. I've been out with teams, especially when I first started doing this, and you would spend the first hour or so doing the stuff that I do during the prelim. And to me, it's a waste. To me, I just want to get in there and investigate. That's the key. We get there on investigation night, offload the equipment. Psychic does a walkthrough with one of our investigators. to help us place cameras or whatever, if there is stuff going on. And then the investigators walk in, and they've got all the readings in their hands. I do not know where the guest is tonight. I don't know if he forgot or what's going on. So it looks like I'm flying solo tonight. So here we go, right? I just resent the link to him. So who knows? It happens. I haven't had a guest drop out in a while. So it beats reading the book, right? So we'll talk about investigating a little bit tonight and what goes into it. What teams actually do when they're out in the field. So yeah, during investigation night, that stuff happens, and I might make a preconceived thing when I'm doing the prelim, going over the paperwork, about where cameras should be set. Where's the most activity in the building? Well, investigation night, that can all change, and that's why we do. We have someone do a walkthrough with one of the mediums, because the medium is the one that's going to see that stuff. If there is activity, that medium, he or she, can direct us as to camera placement. I've got a 9 camera DVR, plus I have another 6 camera DVR that we use. So we have a double DVR system, so we can cover both places. Like in this case, we've got a house to cover, we've got a garage to cover, and then there's a shed way in the back, which at the end of 6.5 acres, we're not going to be able to cover with like corded stuff. We'll have to put regular video cameras back there to cover it, but we will have that covered as well. So I try to cover every room. I've got around 8 digital voice recorders that I will tape up on the walls, with not tape that's going to peel the paint off, of course, but I will tape it up on the walls and within range of the camera, and so those are going all the time as well, so we have that audio. And of course, they're within range of the camera because you don't know if somebody's going to walk in. And I'm not saying any of my team would do it or any of the people in the resident will do it. But, we keep it within range of the camera to keep an eye on, to make sure nobody, nobody tampers with it. So that, that's part of what we do too. The other thing, I've been told by people that have joined my team and left that I'm too anal. I'm a very anal person. And I am. When it comes to investigations, I'm very anal because I want to know what's going on. Whoever's sitting at the command center, there's always a command center, we're monitoring the weather. Weather conditions can affect paranormal activity, temperature, things like that. So we're every half hour, we're writing down the temperature, we're writing down, wind and all that stuff. And, humidity, all that stuff gets written down every 30 minutes. That way, when the investigators turn their paperwork in, and this is part of my being anal, when the investigators are out, it's all related. I'm going to make my point here. It's all related in that when the investigators are out with their paperwork and doing their thing, they will mark down what time, and if there's anything strange that happens or anything that odd or anything that they think needs to be noted, they will mark down the time that it happened, what happened, and that sort of thing. And so when I get all the paperwork back and I go back over that, and now I have taken the weather set, the weather readings every half hour for, say, a 6-hour investigation, I can go back and compare the times that they had their issue, that whatever happened with the weather conditions. And who knows, maybe there's a pattern. I can see a pattern, a certain type of dew point conditions or something, or it might be humidity and they're getting a lot of activity. I can go over that, but I've been told I'm anal because I like that. I like them to tell me directly or put down directly when something occurred. Okay. The other thing is, even our EVP sessions are very meticulous, and that's another thing. Notice the time, note the time and voices. I have records of all my investigators' voices in my laptop, so I'm able to do a compare contrast. But the idea with the EVP sessions is that, they will note the time. Everybody goes around the circle, their normal voice says their name, and they go around the same circle in a whisper and says their name. Okay, because I want to be able to compare, because you do get a lot of whispers, and you'd be surprised, no matter how much you try when you're sitting there in an EVP session, to not say anything or make noises or anything, you'd be surprised how many times your stomach rumbles or your stomach makes noises or you shift around or things like that. And you have to note that on the recordings, because sometimes that stuff can sound like a person's voice. a low whisper person's voice. The other thing I pointed out to Pamela, who's on here, she was having some issues with her wash machine moving around, and she thought maybe it was something paranormal. You know, if somebody overfills a wash machine or has stuff in a, you know, puts a lot in a wash machine, the wash machine will vibrate. Sometimes they'll move around. I have one that does that, and it shakes so bad that it knocks stuff off the shelving on the walls. And so she went ahead and took my advice and checked it out, and sure enough, that's what was going on in her laundry room. The other thing that will happen is a wash machine or a dryer, if they're on during an investigation, and I get the I get the recording back of the EVPs, sometimes just the movement inside there, you know, the mechanism inside there sounds like a human voice. So we have to be very careful about that stuff. And that's another thing that when investigators do their first walkthrough on the investigation, that they have to note, hey, are the machines on the laundry room or not? And if they don't, I'm pretty good about noticing the sounds. I've been doing, I've been doing this 18 years and listening to audio for 18 years. So I'm pretty good on knowing the sounds and what might sound like a wash machine. And I'm pretty good at checking that out. But there's stuff like that, or maybe somebody further, like way back in the house, has a TV on. And the recorder, of course, is going to pick up the voices on the TV. So you have to be careful about what's going on. Even dogs barking. You know, when you're doing these EVP sessions, you have to note dogs barking and things like that. So it's very important. Everything has to be written down and noted. You know, and if you don't do it, if you don't write it down, do it on the tape. Like when I do the prelim on Sunday, since we didn't have enough bodies to deal to write the stuff down, I turned around, did the walk around with my assistant. I did the walk around and with a digital voice recorder in my hand, and I noted everything on the recorder, so I could go back and just jot it all down off of that. It's very important to note this stuff. You have to. There's no choice noting it, because if you don't, you not only do a disservice to what you're out doing, you're doing a disservice to your client. So it's very meticulous. And so yeah, it's funny because my investigators, some of them, not all of them, are jokesters, and they like to, knowingly. I guess he's not coming in. They like to knowingly make fun of me and laugh at me on these recordings. So they will say stuff on purpose on the recordings, and so it's funny. You know, knowingly say stuff, but it is funny because I know they're kidding. It's all good, but I do tend to be very meticulous with stuff. You know, but there's a lot of stuff we like to know. Like, even during the prelim, there's a lot of stuff that we need to know. You know, we're going to look at all that, you know, see what could be causing the high EMF in the house. You know, you'd be surprised with the clock rate. I don't even know if they make... Well, I have one over here, so I probably got EMF beaming on me. A digital clock radio. Or a digital clock. How much EMF can come off a digital clock. And you'd be surprised how far it can emit off the digital clock. So one of the things I trained my assistant this weekend was, okay, let's look at this EMF. If it's high, if it's something high, do me a favor and kind of pull back slowly with the EMF meter and see how far that it emits from the source. Or if it's down on the ground, like say it's a plug, right? Or it's an outlet, rather. I say plug. I'm old. You want to see how high, not only how far out that EMF emits, you want to see how high up it goes as well. Because that could affect the family. For instance, we did a house in near Center Creek, which is up in the Gold Country. And it was quite a while ago. And we went ahead and went up there. And the woman who slept in this particular bedroom was getting headaches and waking up and would throw up and all these things. And so we would get on. So we started to look around in there. And it turns out, even though the house was solar, this room was just like an EMF cage. It was just so full of high EMF. It was spooky. And I even went in there, lay down on the bed, and when I would get up, I couldn't stand up because I was so dizzy after laying on this bed. And so that was a lot of the problem she was having, was the high EMF in this room was making her hallucinate, which is what high EMF does. It makes you hallucinate. You hear voices. And you see things, that's what hallucinating is, you see things, right? So you start to get I'm not going to say loopy, but I guess loopy is a nice name for it. So you start to be loopy after a while, and then you see weird things, you see strange things. And so we were able to debunk that whole thing where she thought she was seeing ghosts in the house, and it turned, you know, in her bedroom, and it turns out that it was this high EMF on her bed. And so they had to track, they had to track it down. We're not electricians, okay? So they would have to go and track it down and figure out what was causing it. You get that all the time. In fact, something like that in an enclosed room like that is like is what they call an EMF cage. And you're just totally inundated and surrounded by EMF. There was an apartment house that I did several years, quite a few years ago, when this older woman was living there. And she was seeing stuff in her apartment. She was hearing voices and seeing stuff. Well, you know, most apartments, the walls are thin anyway. You're going to hear voices. But in this case, she was really having trouble sleeping. She'd end up she was getting these horrible headaches. She ended up going to stay at different hotels. It was so bad. So we went in with our EMF meters, and it was off the charts. As it turned out, we were able to trace the wiring, because you could do that stuff with the EMF meters. You can trace the wiring in walls. So we were able to trace all the wiring in the walls. And all four walls that were surrounding this lady were wiring. And so she was like the main wiring conduit for this apartment. Okay, because I'm talking, you know, not so much apartments like, you know, lots of apartments. These are like the townhouse kind, you know, where there's one on the top, one on the side, one on the side, you know, behind. So she was right in the middle of that. And that's what was causing her problems. And the EMF was so high, there was no place that she could go and no place that we were able to walk around in this apartment to get away from it. And that's what was causing her problems. She moved. She hasn't had a problem. I get emails from time to time from her how happy she is. But she had to actually move out of there because it was causing her major issues with her health and everything else. So, I mean, it's things like that. You know, we just don't go out looking for ghosts. We're going out to look for whatever logical explanation there is in these cases. And sometimes it can be difficult. Sometimes they're not so open and close, right? Sometimes these cases will take us a month, maybe 2 months to figure out. I mean, there was one in particular that took me quite a few months to figure out, and once I did, fantastic, right? I was able to get through and give the people some answers, but there was a lot of confusion going on, even with what they were telling us was going on activity-wise on the premises, and so I was able to sort through it finally, you know? And then there's other cases that we go on that they don't tell us enough information, that people withhold information from us. You know, one in particular, we went in, did the prelim on it, and you know, they did tell us that they saw a dark animal like towards the ground in this apartment, in this house, walking around. But they had also told us that one of their dogs had passed away as well. So I kind of figured, maybe not using my sensitive abilities, but I kind of figured maybe that was this German Shepherd that had passed. And so I didn't give it a second thought. And they had seen the ghost of a little boy in the house and things like that. Investigation night comes around, and we go in and start setting up our cameras. And my investigators that are inside the house, because I was outside, because I had already gotten... Hang on a second. As upon my arrival... Thank you, Grogu. Upon my arrival, I had already started getting a headache. And it got worse. Even as I was sitting outside, and when I would walk in the house, it would really hurt. So I was staying out. And as things were being set up, the investigators kept reporting that they could hear objects and stuff being thrown around in the bedrooms. Yet when they would go in the bedrooms, they were fine, right? But they were hearing these objects being thrown around. And one of my investigators also reported that he had put down his writing board. I call it writing board, you know. Right, okay. He had put down, you know, his paperwork. And the paperwork had been picked up and thrown across the room. And at that point, the alarms start going off. Because this is not what they ever told me. They never told me there was any poltergeist-type activity or anything like that. So I went ahead and started getting on the phone with our remote psychics. I had two cell phones at the time, and so I was like the president. I had the red phone and the blue phone, right? So the phone calls were coming in, and they were experiencing, like I said, they were experiencing stuff being thrown around, chairs being knocked over and things like that. And so I finally get a call. I think it was from Karen Clark, and she said, you guys need to get out of there. This thing doesn't have a face. And usually if something doesn't have a face, it indicates that it was never really of this earth because it doesn't know how to create a human face. And so at that point, I realized we were in over our heads with this house. I pulled the team out. Client arrives because they went to the movies. So they get back, and as they were coming out of their cars, we were packed up, and I said, well, we're done for the night. I'm going to tell you right now that there's a lot more going on in this house than probably what you told us. And he says, well, yeah, to tell you the truth, our daughter kind of egged this stuff on. And I said, well, what do you mean? And he says, well, she was, you know, she watches all those ghost shows on TV, and so she thought it'd be funny to use a Ouija board to bring stuff into the house. And this oldest activity started happening. Well, he never told us that in the original interview. The other thing he neglected to tell us, and this goes hand in hand with something dark and demonic going on in this house, is that they were doing laundry in the laundry room, and this is what he told us as we were leaving. And they were doing a couple loads of laundry, and the dryer door suddenly opened on its own and was ripped off its hinges and was thrown across the room. Not a very good thing to leave out and not tell us. In fact, to tell you honestly, a ghost cannot do that, all right? A spirit cannot do that. The only thing that can do that is something that's extremely powerful and strong, which makes it lean more towards the demonic. And this thing, you know, them not telling us that, that's danger. I mean, what if this thing showed up during the investigation and hurt one of my investigators? Because we took a totally different open-minded approach to this investigation. You know, had we known that this stuff was going on, we would have approached this completely different. As it was at that time, I told him that we would have to have a shaman come in and finish off the case, which is what we did. Well, the shaman finds out that this property had other things attached to it to begin with. And so with the girl coming in, the daughter going in there and offering that open door for stuff to come through, it was just, whatever this was just lying in wait for it, for something like that to be invited in. And so she dealt with it, and she also discovered while dealing with this thing was that this was one of these deals that went back to the family. So this was something that somebody way back in the family history had been doing black magic or was doing witchcraft stuff, and this was a hang-on thing from that. So you've got to be extra careful with these cases, and people have to learn that, you know, the more honest they are, the better we can operate. I mean, it's not let's surprise the ghost hunters, because people can get hurt. People can get really, really hurt. Now, you know, if you go into a place and doors are being ripped off the hinges like that, absolutely. You know, I mean, I've heard a lot of cases where investigators have gone in, not our cases, but other cases where they have gone into a building knowing that there was, demonic activity going on in these buildings. And yeah, the doors have been ripped off hinges while they were there. Things like that have occurred. Generally, the way I see things is if it's above 2 or 3 pounds, that's not a ghost. Anything of any kind of weight, like above that, that's something else altogether different. Because a ghost has to have a lot of energy to move objects around, okay? If they do that, they have to have a lot of energy to even move even light objects around. So if it's a heavy object, then it's something that can generate a lot of power, and that demonic can generate a lot of power. So that's the stuff that we have to look out for in cases. There's buzzwords. In fact, the middle of my questionnaire that I use, I do have a whole section on that, to where I ask them direct questions about, hey, you know, are any objects being moved? How heavy are they? What were your thoughts when they were moved? You know, are you having strange thoughts in your head? Because, you know, there's certain levels to these infestations as well. And there's certain levels to these infestations as well. And I forget what they are, because like I said, we're a little out of practice right now. We're just getting back in there to get out and do stuff, because it's been a long break. But there are certain levels, you know, because you've got, you got possession, you got the level where you don't want to leave your house. You know, there's different stages to to demonic possession and the demonic stuff. So we do ask all those questions on our paperwork too, as well, to, and not so much direct questions about that, but questions that dance around the subject so that we can get a feel whether or not the client may be, you know, involved with something like that, or there's something like that in the house or in the business or building or you know, wherever it's at. So we're looking for all that stuff, you know. So it's things like that. That's why over the years I've had to really put my team together, you know. And it's not just, you know, we're not just a bunch of people that are eager and excited to go look for ghosts. I mean, we are. It's something we love doing. You know, we love helping people and teaching people and educating people about the paranormal. But it's having people on your staff that are professional and can look for things and you can call upon them, you know, to look at different things. Like, you know, we have people on our staff that are contractors. We have people on our staff that are psychologists. We have people on our staff that are former police officers and you know, and they're negotiation specialists. We have people on our staff that are nurses. We have things like that, you know, and we have people on our staff, like I'm a journalist, right? I can read body language just like a police officer can read body language. That's what we have on our staff. And it's nice having those types of people on our staff because we're able to pull from them, you know, hey, maybe this guy might be having, or this gentleman might be having some mental issues or something. You know, it's staff that we can pull from, and I'm really glad I can have that, because once I do the preliminary on the investigations, I can pick and choose who goes out on these investigations just based on the preliminary and who will be the better fit for the investigations. You know, that's something I do, and I think that's what makes my team stand out, you know, from others, because we have that ability to pick and choose professionals to go out on these investigations. You know, it's just plain sense. You know, if you're going to go out to somebody's house, you're going to represent yourself as a ghost hunter or whatever you're going to do, and they're scared of what's going on in their house. You better know what you're doing. You know, you better have a good idea of how to handle it and what to look for when you're out. I mean, we've been on cases where maybe it's an older person that's seeing things, and then it turns out that the person is taking some kind of medication that would make them hallucinate. You know, that's a question we ask, and a lot of people get real shy about answering the question, because that's one of the main questions we ask in that. What medications are you on? Are you taking anything that'll make you, you know, anything for your mind or anything like that? People get really, really quiet about that stuff. They don't want to talk about it. And it's something that they have to talk about when we go out, because it could, whatever they're seeing could be due to the medication that they're taking. And we've had several cases where that has, in fact, been the case. And, you know, it's nothing to be embarrassed about. It's just, it is what it is. And that's what we have to know, because if we can help you that way and say, hey, maybe you should go back to your doctor and talk to him or her about your medication because you're hallucinating, you know, you're starting to see stuff that's not there, that's helpful for the client in the end, right? So, I mean, like I said, that's why we have nurses on staff, you know, because that's the stuff that we have to watch out for. And that's where the advice comes. I can sit down with a group of people after we do the investigation, after the prelim, and say, look, you know, this is what seems to be going on. And if these people are perfectly honest with me, I can say, this is the medications they're on. What's up with these medications? Or I can Google them or whatever, and then get a fairly decent idea of what may or may not be going on in this house. A particular house that we did a few years ago, before COVID, the gentleman had a history of brain tumor. And they had removed a brain tumor a few years back with him, and he was starting to see stuff in the house, and his personality was very gruff, and he was very angry all the time. And so we did this investigation barely, because this guy was so out of control. And as it turned out, there was a lot of poltergeist activity, and it was coming from him. He was the main cause of the activity in the house. Well, turns out, just after we did the investigation and I was putting the paperwork together, I get a call from his wife, and his wife said that he had another brain tumor, and that's what was causing his personality change, and that's what was causing him to more than likely see things in his house, because he could really describe stuff that nobody else was seeing. to experience this activity. But there was also stuff, it wasn't just that. There was also stuff that was actually going on because there was a resident ghost in the house that was there that we knew of. But other than that, the majority of the activity was caused by this man who had this tumor that he didn't realize this tumor was coming in. And that's, again, that's the stuff we have to look for. We have to really, really search back in medical history and look at all that stuff. So it's a huge, huge undertaking. It's a huge responsibility to take on these residential cases. And any team that tells you it's a ha-ha, simple thing to do, it's not. Because when you go out, you are dealing with somebody's life. You are dealing with somebody's fears. And you know what? This bugs the heck out of me here. Since I switched the mic this way, having that thing there in my face just drives me crazy. But it's a huge responsibility when you go out. In fact, when we first started doing these residentials, because we had done about 3 or 4 years of just doing commercial stuff like in old hotels and things like that, when we first started doing residentials as a team, we were scared. We were really afraid to go in and do them because we didn't want to mess up somebody's life. Because that's what you're dealing with. It's huge. It's just like being a journalist, newspaper articles. There's a thing, such a thing in a paper as a correction, right? Where if there's a mistake in a story, let me some water. Thanks, Grogu. Where if there's a mistake in a story, what do? You write a correction and it gets buried on page A2 or page A3, right? It gets buried on that general page. The problem is, once that's done, even with a correction, the damage is done. Okay, because not many people actually go open up a newspaper or an online newspaper, because a lot of them are online now, and go to that page to say, oh, let's see what they screwed up in the newspaper. Let's go find the corrections. A lot of people don't do that. The majority of the public doesn't do that. So once you go out on a story, and if you're wrong, or you print something wrong about somebody, or write something wrong about somebody, it's too late. There it is, there it is in black and white. And people will take that because they're skilled journalists or whatever. People will take that verbatim, and that's that, that gets stuck in their head. So, I mean, you can ruin people's lives. Okay? You literally can ruin people's lives. And doing paranormal investigating in somebody's house, when you're dealing with children, you're dealing with elderly people, you're dealing with people that are afraid, you're dealing with people that may have maybe mental issues. You don't know what you're going to walk into when you go out on these cases. So you have to be very careful. It's the same thing. You have to be very careful when you're out on these cases because you can ruin somebody's life if you're not careful. So it's a huge, huge burden, responsibility, But I mean, and once we started getting out, and that's when I started, bringing on all the professionals, the nurses and the psychologists and stuff onto my team, because I realized that what we were doing was bigger than what we had thought we were doing. It was a lot bigger, in the scope of things. So that's why I ended up with bringing in these professionals and having people. And then I even have people in my family that are professional, contractors and whatnot, and I'm able to call them and consult, about different things. About wiring, how wiring runs, and different things like that. We have one gentleman on our staff that used to put HVAC systems in buildings, and he's used to crawling through attics and looking at stuff. And that's how we got down to where we could tell. Here's a hint I'm going to tell you guys, something that you don't normally hear about. You go into a house, and they talk about banging in the walls, or they talk about hearing scratching in the walls, or up above their heads, they hear footsteps or whatever. First thing I think is either piping in the walls, because pipes will bang in walls, especially a lot of the older places, rodents. And it's funny when you bring that up with people, because people will look at you and they will swear up and down, oh no, we don't have rats, we don't have anything like that. And you hate to have to tell them and say, look, I think this is what's going on, because they get insulted. So, especially if it's in the attic. There's an easy way to tell if somebody has rodents in their attic, and this is something you as a person in your own house can do, and it's really, really simple. Rats' urine is fluorescent. A lot of people don't know that. And a rat will leave a trail of urine. They just don't go in one place. They go as they're moving. So they're in motion and they're leaving urine trails. So what you can do is go get a portable. You can order these battery powered, which we have for staff. You can order these battery powered fluorescent lights. Just handheld battery powered fluorescent lights. Then you can go up in the attic and look around. And if you find these fluorescent trails in your attic, then you've got rats. You got vermin up there. And that's the easiest way to do it. And that's how we do it. We use these portable fluorescent lights to go up and look in the attic. The other way to tell, right, surefire, is if there's stuff that's been chewed on. You know, wiring and stuff. I mean, that's the normal thing people would think of when they think of rats and things like that in their attic. You know, or in their walls. The wiring, holes in the walls, whatever. But a surefire way of being able to tell is take up a fluorescent light and you will see the trails from the rat urine. You know, so that's something we do. We take a level. You know, if you got a cabinet that keeps opening by itself and you think it might be paranormal, we're going to take a level and put it on the floor to see if maybe there's a slant in the floor. Did a residential out in Rockland just before COVID. And that was the case. The drawers, they had the kind of newer drawers that have the wheels in there, and they were very, very new. And so they opened up easily. And they would open. And what did we find out? Not only was there a slant to the floor, but when you would walk around, because they had like a crawl space underneath the house, when you would walk around the bedroom near those things, just the motion in of you stepping down would open these drawers up. Debunked, right? I mean, that's what we have to do. Because, I mean, you will think everything is, you know, as a client and you're there and things start happening in your house. Once you start getting, I'm not going to say paranoid, but once you start becoming afraid of what might be going on and your mind starts to move around, especially if you've been watching the ghost TV shows, right? These things that are on set on the weekends and whatnot. AMC, right? AMC channel? Is that what does it? I forget. I don't have those channels anymore. But, you know, those things that are on Discovery Channel, AMC, you're going to start thinking. Because, I mean, you've seen it on TV, and therefore when you hear a noise or something you can explain or stuff starts going on, you start thinking about it, right? And then the next thing you know, everything that starts happening starts looking paranormal to you. You don't, you know, you start not to look at what could possibly be logically causing it. So, yeah, so that's, you know, that's our job. We get out there and we look at all that stuff. We're looking at everything. Are we out to debunk everything? Some teams, you know, there are teams that are geared for that. There are teams that go out, and that's all they do is they go out to debunk. Do they believe in ghosts? Eh, maybe. A lot of the teams that do that stuff, they've never seen anything or experienced anything. So to them, hey, if it happens, great. We would love nothing more than to see something. But in the meantime, I want to show you what could be causing your stuff. I prefer to do both. You know, I prefer to do that debunk. I also prefer, let me sit up here. I'm sinking. You know, I prefer to do both. I prefer to do that debunk part, and I also prefer to go out with our mediums and sensitives and look for ghosts. Because who knows? You know, the only time you can claim a ghost is when you've gone through, you've debunked everything possible. That's your job, to go out there, and I know they hate the word debunk. I forget what word they're using now. God, I feel so old sometimes. But you go out and you look for everything possible for a logical explanation for what's going on in that particular place. When you get to the point that you can no longer find stuff that's logical, that's when you start looking at the paranormal part, when you can start thinking, well, gee, maybe something paranormal's going on. But you have to look for all that logical stuff. You don't go in with a preconceived thought that the place is haunted, because that's wrong. All right? Now, we may do a pre-read. I may turn around, you know, with each investigation and maybe go Google up a picture of the front of the house or building and send it off to Nancy Matz for her to do a pre-read on. I may do that to see what she gets. You know, sometimes she doesn't get anything, right? But I may have that in my hand. But I'm still going out on these investigations, knowing what I know from what Nancy told me, to look at the things that Nancy was talking about and see if I can find a logical explanation for them. You know, I'm not just going to take what she told me and run with it. That's why Nancy or Karen or Tim, who's our new, Tim from Wisconsin, who's going to probably be our new pre-reader, off-site read, you know, what happens is after they have their read and the sensitive for the night goes out to the location, neither psychic knows what the other psychic got for readings. So the one that goes out that night has no clue what Nancy or Tim or Karen got. All right? What they go do is they go out cold. All right? Then, once they come back, then I will sit there and compare what they got with what Nancy and Tim or Karen got. And then we might have something going on, a pattern. But no one's told, you know, no one tells the psychics what we got, you know, what happened at the prelims. No one's told them anything. All right? They don't get that paperwork. Just the investigators. No one tells them what the remote, that's the word I was looking for, remote reader. No one knows what the remote reader got. So they go in cold. That's important for that. All right? But even, you know, we're still debunking. I have mediums on my staff that will also debunk. They just don't go in as mediums. They go in to look at logical explanations for stuff. Even though they might be seeing stuff when they're there during the investigation, they're still looking at logical explanations for stuff, which is really cool when you see a medium do it. So it's a very involved process, and it really breaks my heart to hear, you know, that there's teams out there that just go in because they're having a good old time to go in. We have had to do cleanup as a team behind teams that have done that. And then the families are exasperated because nothing got accomplished. They might have come out and the team, you know, I've heard stories of teams going out to properties and having barbecues or having a picnic during the investigation or having a party during the investigation. You can't do that. You just can't do that. Unprofessional, you know? So, yeah, and a lot of the times teams like my team end up having to go in and do the cleanup on it. They leave a mess as far as the investigation goes. And we have to go in and clean it up. Excuse me for 1 second. Drinky, drinky, drinky. And I keep doing, so refreshing, right? But, I keep emphasizing, it's a huge responsibility. And I just, you know, when I choose team members as well, we have some new team members coming on. In fact, we're going to be doing some training in April with our new team members. We have all kinds of new equipment. Unfortunately, my best friend, who was my right hand on this team, passed away a year and a half ago, 2 years. And she had her own team up in Oregon. And so upon passing, I inherited her equipment. And so she had a lot of stuff I didn't have. A lot of my stuff was old school. She had some of the newer stuff. So we're all going to be training all the newer equipment to try it out. Is there any particular equipment that I think is great for use? I do. We have a FLIR now. Love using the FLIR. Love it. Infrared, good stuff. We also have I call them an X-Cam, but I mean, you know, the X-Cam stick person thing. I have two of those machines. I love those. I think they're great if they're used properly. Okay, that's the other thing with ghost hunting that people don't realize, that a lot of people get this equipment and they don't use it properly. They don't know what they're doing with it. You know, there's a lot of debunking about the X-Cam. There's a lot of debunking about a lot of the equipment, you know, from people that specialize in that stuff. If you use it properly, you can get results. You know, if you correspond stuff. Just like EVPs. It's like anything else. I'm not going to take an EVP at face value saying, okay, this is this dead person talking. No. I'm using dowsing rods during the EVP session. We're taking photos during the EVP session. We're shooting video during the EVP session. Because if I don't have at least two corresponding things happen during that EVP session, I don't use the evidence. Okay? So if I get a yes answer on the dowsing rods, and I get a yes answer to the same question on the recorder, we got some corresponding stuff going on. Or maybe there's somebody standing over my shoulder that I don't know is there, and during the session when I get the yes answer on the dowsing rods, maybe there's a face over my shoulder that they pick up, then we've got something going on. You know, you want to double check everything you get. You want to make it abundantly clear. That's not the word I'm looking for. But you want to make sure that evidence that you're getting is correlated with other evidence that you can put together. Or maybe it's something that a grandmother would say to the client, and the client says, all of a sudden the client's over there, and you see the client break into tears because the ghost may be her grandmother, right? That's our job. Is to do as thorough a job as possible for our clients. Because if we don't, it's a disservice. You know? It's not like TV. We don't go in and within a day and a half, we're back at the house going, oh yeah, this is what happened. Here's our stuff. It's not like TV. It's very meticulous. You got to figure when we go in, we might be running 9 cameras. We might be running, 15 cameras. Okay? So you got 6 hours of 15 cameras to look at. You've got another 6 hours of audio, and maybe I might run 8 digital recorders in the rooms. You've got all this to listen to and look at. You're not going to do it in 2 days. Not even with 3 or 4 people. You're not going to do it in 2 days. That's why with our team, it's always important to have somebody sitting at the command center, because they're watching as many, you know, maybe 1 or 2 people at the command center watching the cameras. So if they do see something weird on the cameras, they can mark what time it occurred, which will make it a lot easier than having to sort through all kinds of video. You don't have to sit there and run through all that video. Sometimes it depends on the size of the building we're in. But I mean, you know, we have to do as concise a job as possible. And then the report I take out at the very end and share with my clients, not only do they get a DVD of, you know, any EVPs or any photos or whatever, we also have a report that's like 30 pages that goes out to the clients. And it covers the investigator statements about what they experienced during the case. It covers the client's the witness statements of what they had happened, you know, the witness being the clients. And then that also has the evidence in it that they can go back to and look at. Really evidence that they gave us. So it's all about, you know, tons and tons of paperwork that this team is using and what the client gets back to do our presentation. Then at that point, the client can make that decision. Is this your grandfather? You know, is it not bothering you? Do you want to keep it and have it in the house, or do you want us to cleanse the house, or do we need clergy to come out, or what do we need to do to make life better for you guys here at the house? And then I can also tell you on this, the hardest thing for people, and you know this yourself, if you get spooked about something, let's say you're taking a walk. And somebody jumps out of a bush at you and ha 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 ha. But it spooks you. What is the hardest thing for you to do? To forget about it. Because the next time you go walking past that particular bush, if the sun's going down or it's night, you're going to look over there and wonder if somebody's in that bush. Well, it works the same way with paranormal investigating. If we go through and cleanse your house, okay, one of the things we say is, well, we've done this. You might have a little activity after we leave. Let us know what's going on. But beyond that, try not to think about this anymore because you might draw it back in. Okay? That's where the interesting things occur, because sometimes we have to go back a second time to do a cleansing because the client will draw it back in inadvertently, because a thought crosses your mind. You might look in a corner where you saw some ghost with fangs or something. Ah, Stan's here. Hang on. Hang on a second. Hello, sir.
Hey, I just, can you hear me?
Yeah.
I just sent you an email. My wife ate something about 2 hours ago, hour and a half ago. She came down tremendous food poisoning or something. And so I was taking care of her in the middle of supposed to be down here. And I do apologize. I'm sorry.
Would you like to reschedule?
Well, suit yourself. If she's now resting in bed, I got some cookie stuff you put down to put out fires and stuff. Maybe that'll help. But anyway, how long are you running for now?
We've been on an hour. So
how much longer do you have to run?
About 2 minutes.
Oh, well, I guess we better reschedule then. I do apologize. Okay. Jeez, I'm so sorry.
Oh, that's okay. How does next Wednesday look for you?
Let me just check here. That's the third. Everything is open then, so it would be at the same time then?
Yeah, let's do next Wednesday.
Okay, I do apologize.
Don't worry about it, Stan. It's all good. It's all good.
Okay.
Okay, well, buddy.
Bye-bye now.
Okay, bye. All right, well, we'll see him next Wednesday then, 6:30 p.m. Pacific. That was quick, right? All right, so no problem. Anyway, I'm going to close off now. And I will see you guys tomorrow, or whoever decides to come visit with me tomorrow, 9 a.m. Pacific. We will be doing Coffee with a Ghost Hunter. So come join me over at the California Haunts Meetup and sign up over there and join me at 9 a.m. Pacific tomorrow, and we'll have Coffee with a Ghost Hunter. You can ask me anything, you know, like everything I talked about tonight went over. You can ask me for more details or whatever you want, okay? You can talk about cases if you want, and whatever comes to mind. Personal stuff, I'll talk about that. So you can do that. And then again, we will be back tomorrow night with, who will we be back with tomorrow night? Oh, Steve. I'm just having a day, haven't I? Hang on a second. Steve Stockton will be with us tomorrow night. And he's going to be talking about odd creatures and missing persons. And Marisa, I see you in the chat room. We're talking national parks. Okay, so we're going to be talking about that tomorrow night. That'll be 6:30 p.m. Pacific with Steve Stockton. And, yeah, I'm looking forward to that. Anyway, Sam will be back with us next Wednesday night. I feel bad for his wife. I'll send him a note on that. And so we got a great lineup coming up next week, and I'm really excited about that. Lots of good shows. Lots of good shows. All right, I will see you guys tomorrow at 6:30 p.m. Pacific. Have a great evening, and happy ghost hunting. Hey guys, my guest tonight, Stan Deo, is going to be talking about ancient giants and aliens. Look at that, even I make mistakes. Here we go. That's it.